then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's November the 14th, 2013. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, I'm going to need some pretty contiguous me time on the air so I can do some ranting and raving at you. So I think once again this week I'm going to let the guest speakers take the lead. Now, I understand from some of your emails that some of you have developed a habit of skipping over some of the guest speakers and jumping around on the podcast until you locate my dulcet tones again. Guys, please don't do that. First off, it's rude. Our guest speakers have put a lot of work into these presentations, and I put a lot of work into editing them. Secondly, this is supposed to be a revolutionary independence movement we're building here, not the Harold Covington fan club. You need to know and understand that despite my raging abuse and tirades on occasion about you people getting up off your asses or not doing so, there are others involved in this, and it's not just a one-man band. Anyway, here's Gretchen.
Good evening, comrades. Recently I was at the library and I was looking for The True Believer, and I didn't end up finding that. Instead, I ended up finding a book about the history of our movement that goes from the teens into the 90s, and it's called The Emergence of a Euro-American Radical Right. And this is a book written from a mainstream viewpoint. Actually, I think one of the authors, based on the names, may actually be a Jewish author, but it's a book that really tries to take a certain balance in describing the movement. Now, I'm just going to sort of skim quickly through the early parts of it, talking about the nativists prior to World War I, and it talks about Russian activists that came to the States after the Russian Revolution and the Italian fascists in the U.S. and Bunds in the U.S. One interesting development was something that Fritz Kahn tried to do because of all the problems with the Bunds. He was one of the first to sort of create this odd mixture of American and National Socialists, very much the same type of propaganda strategy you'll see today if you look at the National Socialist movement and the flag that they have. Now, of course, it talks about Father Coughlin and how he was actually very liberal at first, but over the years he became very critical of Roosevelt. Now, in 1941, he was told to stop talking by the Archdiocese of Detroit, and that was rather fortunate for him because he was never charged with sedition. Now, obviously, during the war, things were difficult in the States and had to be curtailed, but as early as 1946, you had new movements starting up in Italy and in 1949 in Germany. Now, one survivor, of course, in the American West was Christian Identity because of its isolation. Now, the Italian movement was already having conferences by 1950, and in 1951, it was decided that the European social movement was too much concerned with communism and not enough with race. And so there was a European New Order movement started in Zurich. And they were already worried about the Muslimization of Europe. It talks about the 1962 Coxwold Agreement, but there were some Europeans, such as the Nordic Reichsparty, Oridsen, who, even though they liked Rockwell, could not envision a World Union of National Socialist headquarters being in the U.S. Now, it tries to talk about the differences between American groups and European groups, and says that American groups generally are more legal, less mainstream, more religious, and given to the idea of non-consensual regime change. It talks about how in Europe, even though the Europeans will go out into the forests and into the woods for training or for maybe camping out, in Europe you really can't go live in the forest. That's not really a realistic lifestyle choice. Whereas in America you can go off into a cabin. Now, it does say quite rightly that a lot of groups, a lot of these radical right groups, really don't like the states. Now, obviously, that's because of the defeat of the Axis, the multicultural, multiracial culture that's more and more evident, and then also just pop culture. And I think that's all a very fair assessment. It does say that the militia may be an exception because they tend to be super patriots. There's all kinds of cross-pollination. Now, it goes into the whole James Madole and then going into James Mason and their sort of occult ideas that probably stem in some respects from a book that I reviewed much earlier on, some months back, having to deal with these kind of Lucifer beliefs. What these turned into was they turned into certain occult concepts that really started to get more and more wacky. And I can see why Harold advises to stay away from them, because Harold has seen a lot in this movement over the years. Now, in the case of Mason, of course, this movement has its main roads, its side roads, and its cul-de-sacs. The thing about the cul-de-sacs, at best they'll waste your time, and at worst they're inhabited by mentally ill people. Now, the problem is that this James Mason decided to move into a cul-de-sac, and he spent the rest of his life praising a mentally ill inhabitant, a neighbor of one of these cul-de-sacs. And he lost a lot of his credibility. But Mason is still an interesting character. He joined the ANP very early. Actually, at the age of 16, he hopped on a bus, paid for by William Pierce, to start an exciting new life. So he had this promising beginning, but then he got rather waylaid. And it just talks about all the various PLEs. It mentions Elohim City and Almost Heaven. And just the fact that people come and go from this movement for all kinds of various reasons, some sort of rather odd reasons. And sometimes I think they just want to leave and they make an excuse of some kind. Now, one very interesting character in the movement is Joist.
Gretchen is referring here to Comrade Joost Turner of the NS Kindred, a man whom I knew pretty well back in the day.
And this was someone that started the NS Kindred. Joyce was a Vietnam vet, and the NS Kindred is an Odinist National Socialist group that he was trying to have in the hills of California. Now, at first he advertised the group a lot, and he tried to get people to come and sort of abandon everything and join his PLE. But the people who could abandon everything, who had no job, no relationships, no family, there was a reason for that. Often these people were kind of off the wall. And so he was attracting all the wrong people. So he decided to rename his group Ara Kyra and make it a Dharmic group and a yogic group. And I'm sure that the members of this group suddenly had conduct restrictions, diet restrictions, meditation, fasting, and all this. And it very quickly weeded out the wrong people. It really was off to a good start. Unfortunately, Jerry's ended up having a heart attack, and so that caused leadership problems. But really, his experiment started to really work very well. It's still something that could really be held as a good example. Now, it also talks about Tommy Ryden. He was a Swedish activist, and he decided to leave the movement eventually, but started in the movement very young, and at first was interested in the Klan. He was raised Baptist. After a while, he traveled to South Africa. He got involved in Christian Identity and was involved in that for quite a number of years. Met his wife, Maud, had 4 children. So a very stable family man. He has a large family to support, so he ends up leaving the movement. So it's rather dispiriting, I suppose, to end at that note. But I really think this book attempts to give an objective overview, and it doesn't overly sensationalize anything. So I think it was an interesting book to read. The only problem is it's rather dated now because it was written in the 90s, although it does talk about the beginnings of the internet, and it talks about something very interesting called ToolNet, which was developed by the Germans to get around their censorship. And it talks about how the internet could lead to just more internet and could really be an excuse for people to avoid the real world. So it definitely anticipates that problem. So it says there's pros and cons to the internet. So I thought it was an interesting book, and I actually found it fairly enjoyable to read in the sense that it really attempted and it was really very objective. There are parts of it that were somewhat troubling, but only because the movement can be that way at times. I enjoyed it. It had some pertinent things to say, even though it was an older book. So I hope you found this review interesting. I know that I have found this book to be really, I think, rather valuable, especially in terms of its lessons. So thank you for listening.
A Marxist editor started his own political party. They became known as the Black Shirts. His name was Mussolini. As a result of establishing an independent socialist party, the opposition came from a very strange source. It came from the Marxists. So why would Marxists oppose an independent socialist party started by a former Marxist editor? The formation of an independent socialist party led to the discovery of the Jewish conspiracy. Unfortunately for England, Sir Oswald Mosley did not understand the Jewish conspiracy. Neither has America understood the Jewish conspiracy either. Why would Jews, who are bankers and capitalist pigs, be the leaders of a socialist party? Jews are not socialists. The Jewish conspiracy is the infiltration of a working-class political party by the enemies of the working class. In other words, if you are stupid enough to allow Jews to run a working-class political party, then you will get Jewed. Because National Socialism is a working-class party, it does not attract many business people or aristocrats. Any member of the upper class or the middle business class that supports National Socialism will be persecuted for it. Economics and war are separate events. If your ideology is successful in economics, it does not mean that you'll be successful in war. The success of National Socialism in economics threatened the immoral wealth of the upper class. Therefore, war had to be declared against National Socialism by the upper class and the aristocracy. Churchill belonged to the upper class. Rothschild has a palace near Birmingham, England. The Jewish upper class declared war on Germany. The upper class can persuade the working class to support their wars by means of the press because they own the newspapers, the radio, and TV. The upper class will tell the working class that support their wars is patriotic, whereas the war against Germany was a class war. It was a war between the upper class of England, the Jewish upper class, and the Jewish-led Communist Party. The rank and file of the Communist Party were stupid enough to believe in the lies of the Jewish leadership, stupid enough to follow the leadership of the Rothschild. The Second World War means that millions upon millions of working people died fighting against their own class in a war to secure and maintain the immoral wealth of the bankers and capitalist bosses. The communism of the Second World War was Jewish fraud. The real working class socialist party was the National Socialist Party started by a Marxist editor, Mussolini, and continued in Germany. Now let me send a word to the IRA. Do you still believe in the socialist fraud of the Second World War? Are Jews the leaders of your ideology? Socialism means seizing the means of production and placing it into the hands of the producing or working class. Ireland needs to nationalize the banks. But such nationalization will never occur under a communist party that is led by Rothschild. The IRA needs to become a national socialist party and allow only true Irishmen to become its leaders. Allowing the IRA to be led by Rothschild sounds like treason, doesn't it? Because National Socialism is a working-class political party and is therefore acceptable to use working-class political activism to achieve its political objectives. Now how did class come to be part of the English social structure? In 1066, the Saxons lost their war to the Normans. The Normans became the landowners and the Saxons became the peasants. The class structure is based on war. Saxons lost the war. Today things are the same. The class structure is defended by violence. The police carry weapons to defend the financial interests of the upper class. The immigration invasion of England is the work of the upper class. The immigrants are brought in to destroy trade unionism. And the same is true in America. The Jewish-led communists are stupid enough to obey the orders of their upper-class Jewish leadership and support immigration. The Jewish-led Communist Party are traitors to the working class and deserve to get their asses beaten out of existence in England, Ireland, America, and every other English-speaking colony. They are working for the capitalist pigs. Got it? The capitalist pigs joined forces with the Jewish-led Communist Party and fought against National Socialism because Winston Churchill and other capitalist pigs knew that the communism Stalin was a fraud. The working class of American England could not figure out why they were fighting a war against the workers in another country. They were too stupid. They believed the papers and the radio. The veterans of the Second World War died to save the wealth of the upper class. The pen is mightier than the sword. How is that? If I pick up my sword, I have one soldier. Whereas if I pick up my pen, I can raise an army. The world is ruled by the sword. If you preach the truth about National Socialism, the real truth, that is, my words will raise an army from the working class. And that army will, in the end, crush the fraudulent Communist Party and every other enemy of the working class. So spread the word. Now a word about religious Orthodox Jews. Orthodox Jews, believe it or not, blame the Holocaust onto the Reform Jews. Now communism is an atheistic political party, but Orthodox Jews believe in God. So that in conclusion, Orthodox Jews would never join an atheistic political party. However, Orthodox Jews practice the Talmud and they run Israel, and almost all of them support Zionism. They are the Jews to whom Jesus said, "Woe to you scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites! How are you going to escape the judgment of hell?" It is most likely that secular atheistic Jews would support communism. Israel is a divided nation. The Orthodox throw rocks at the secular Jews for driving their cars on the Sabbath. So in fairness, it is the communist Jews who need to be blamed for the Jewish conspiracy.
Okay, looks like we have in our wee little movement a whole new canon or tradition of white racial music springing up. Some rock, some country, some rockabilly, so forth and so on. Now this one is called The Goys of Summer. And once again, either the guy who sent it to me forgot to tell me who's singing this, or else I somehow missed it in his email. Either way, if you can let me know who this is, I will be glad to give him credit next week because he definitely deserves an A for effort here.
Hello, Paul. I'm going to sing y'all a song. I spent the last week writing the lyrics for it. I just bastardized the hell out of the boys of summer. This is the Goys of Summer.
You own every bank. You even write out laws. You took the flow of money with your greedy claws. Oy vey, must be nice to be so comfortable. Beating off the rest of us, parasitic buck in slow-mo. Mr. Goldstein, you scheming, thieving scum. You got your sideburns down and your yarmulke on, baby. How many times will you cry for 6 million after the goys of summer have gone? Wonder how it must have felt when driven out of every land that you coveted with cold green eyes, strangled with your scaly hands, victimized, justified, merchant is your friend. This every fool believes and gets a backstab in the end. Mr. Goldstein, rubbing your hands with the light. You try to make me feel guilty 'cause I'm a wife. I must now call on the help of Ben Garrison after the goys of summer have gone. Out on the road today I saw the Star of David on a Cadillac. Little voice inside my head saying Ford was right, you can never look back. I didn't understand till I took the red pill. Now I can see all you fucking vampiric shills. Mr. Goldstein, you scheming, thieving scum. You got your sideburns down and your yarmulke on, baby. How many times will you cry 6 gorillion after the goys of summer have gone? Mr. Goldstein, rubbing your hands with the light. You try to make me feel guilty 'cause I'm a wife.
Fun.
Okay, once again this week I'm waiting the front of the show with other people's material because my schedule this week is a bit up in the air. Now, there is some possibility that the show may come out on Thursday this week because something has come up which is going to take up most of my Wednesday. I'll try to finish up tonight and get it on the air, but just as a reminder, all of you need to remember that officially Radio Free Northwest is dated on Thursday of every week, and our promised podcast time is 8 p.m. Pacific time. I just usually get it uploaded a day early. So always remember, we're not officially late until 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific time on Thursdays. And like I said, it's possible I may not get this one up until Thursday this week. Now I'm going to play for you another 15-minute or so clip of Dr. Revelo P. Oliver delivering his famous Conspiracy or Degeneracy speech of July 1966 to the National Convention of the John Birch Society, I want to say in San Francisco, which at that time had not been totally taken over by bugger boys. This is one of the most brilliant and renowned speeches ever given by anyone in our movement. It is historic. And it was so strong and incisive that it got Dr. Oliver kicked out of the John Birch Society. The candy man didn't like being outshone. I will try to get the rest of this speech on the air over the next 2 episodes of Radio Free Northwest. I repeat, this is historic material here. You guys really need to give it a listen, even though it is very dated.
The one member of the university administration who was forced to resign was, of course, the man who was so reactionary as to think that there should be some perceptible difference between a public university and a garbage dump. Berkeley is not alone. At one of the institutions in Oklahoma, when the local police raided a nest of undergraduates, confiscated a very large store of narcotics, and hauled out of beds more than a dozen creatures who, being naked, were discovered to be of very oddly assorted sexes, the attitude of the faculty was shown by a yelp about police brutality and human rights. One thing that is producing these human drugs is, of course, the epidemic of addiction to narcotics among school children. There are three principal drugs: marijuana, which is brought in chiefly from Mexico; heroin, which is brought in from Red China and Red Cuba; and lysergic acid diethylamide, commonly known as LSD. Of the three, marijuana is the one most widely used by high school and college students, and it is frequently used as a starter. That is to say, once the victim is addicted to marijuana, he is supplied with marijuana to which the stronger drugs have been added, often without his knowledge. Of the three, lysergic acid diethylamide is by far the more dangerous, for it not only produces hallucinations and conduct such as that of the brother of little Bobby Baker, the great statesman in Washington. The brother was recently found naked in the top of a tree, peering into the windows of an apartment building. His explanation was that he'd had a dose of lysergic acid diethylamide. That drug also permanently damages the mind and produces irreparable harm. Now, Mr. Joseph J. Healy, chief of the narcotics division in Illinois, in his recent testimony before the U.S. Senate, stated that a principal obstacle to attempts to control the traffic in narcotics was the attitude of the colleges themselves. The educators, according to Mr. Healy, do not want the use of narcotics inhibited because, they say, students should be able to experiment and should be given freedom of choice of personal behavior. Of course, that's just the kind of gabble that we have been hearing from progressive and social-minded educators for decades. But if you were to talk to each of the educators who squawk about freedom of choice in the use of narcotics, including mind-destroying drugs, you would find that they do not believe in freedom of choice of personal behavior in other matters. But instead, they actually compel the hapless young men and women in their institutions to share rooms with Negroes, with Asiatics, with known sexual perverts, with known drug addicts. There must be no freedom of choice in such matters. We've got to have integration. That is what is being done by educators. What is more, the American people are paying them to do it. But what is happening to us? I have given you but one tiny example, one out of the probably 600 ways in which we are financing our own destruction. Everywhere you look, you will see, unless you close your eyes, the foulness and the moral rot of a society on the verge of total ruin. And yet it seems incredible, doesn't it? Here we are, comfortably seated in one of the best hotels left in the country, after an excellently prepared dinner, with intricate machinery at work to keep the temperature and humidity just what we wanted, with other intricate machinery lighting this hall, with a whole staff of attentive employees ministering to our comfort. It's hard to remind ourselves that the lights may go out 5 minutes from now and stay out if some Bolshevik agent 500 miles away has been ordered to pull a single switch. It's hard to remind ourselves that some of us may not reach our homes tonight without having been robbed, raped, or murdered as a result of the assiduous, persevering, and successful efforts of Earl Warren and his gang to guarantee criminals immunity from arrest and prosecution. It is painful to think that possibly tonight or tomorrow, some part of this city, conceivably including this hotel, may be reduced to a shambles of smoking ruins by howling mobs of hate-crazed savages. For what happened in Los Angeles, California, a few months ago was but a small pilot study for the actions that the communist conspiracy is planning in all large cities. And if you try to imagine what will happen to you and yours if the Bolsheviks officially take over the United States, your mind will refuse to contemplate it. We're so comfortable here. So comfortable here and now that all those things seem fantastic. When you try to think about them, you have the sense of unreality that I had a little while ago when I sat in a luxurious apartment, 30 floors above the street, and conversed with a man who has made a very considerable fortune by sagacious investments. He has been quietly transferring his funds to several other parts of the world where civilization may last a little longer. And he intends to escape from the United States before the butchery starts. He wanted to know how much time we have left. And of course, I couldn't tell him. I could not even tell him that he was right in making arrangements to escape. For I really do not know whether or not we have already passed the point of no return. I only know that I hope very much that we have not. But it did seem unreal, almost dreamlike, to be discussing such things in the apparent security of that apartment, quiet, far above the orderly streets of the city, with the sun bright and hot in a cloudless sky outside, and the unseen machinery keeping us cool inside. But no one who knows anything of our present plight could possibly affirm that that man was taking a foolish precaution. What has happened to us? There are just two kinds of explanation. One is that what we are witnessing is a natural process, the result of biological and historical forces that we are powerless to control, and that therefore all that we can do is watch with melancholy resignation the terrible collapse of the world in which we are willing to live. Of course, those biological and historical forces have been variously identified by different writers, from Spengler to Bagby, but the terms that I have used fairly state the general import of 100 different theories. The other explanation is that we are the victims of some vast and evil conspiracy that has been working for a long time with almost infinite cunning and patience to undermine and destroy civilization, or at least the only civilization that matters to us, the one that we, the white men of the West, have created. Here again, there are diverse theories as to the nature and origin of the conspiracy, or of the central conspiracy, should there perchance be more than one at work. The one thing of which we can be absolutely certain, of course, is that there is an international communist conspiracy which operates under various guises, or at least in collaboration with various allies, such as the so-called Fabian Socialists. The discussion begins when we try to decide just how strong and multiplex the communists are, and whether they are really the central conspiracy or merely an arm of it. There is a wide variety of explanations, but I think we can reduce that variety to three principal identifications. The conspiracy that is destroying us is, we are told, a conspiracy of communists, or of Illuminati, or of Jews. Now, most of the authors who offer us one or another of these three identifications expound their views in a manner that is less than cogent. Most of them either overstate or oversimplify their case, and some of them, I am sorry to say, give the impression that they are no more intelligent than liberal intellectuals. Most of the writers on this subject are either so fascinated by their own discoveries or so anxious to convince the maximum number of readers that they imply that the conspiracy they identify is the root of all evil. That if it were abolished, mankind, all mankind, mind you, would enter instanter on a golden age of peace and domestic tranquility and happiness. If only by some miracle all the Bolsheviks or all the Illuminati or all the Jews were vaporized at dawn tomorrow, we should have nothing more to worry about. The trouble with that beatific vision, of course, is that every educated man knows it just can't be so. Civilization, in the wider sense, is a very recent thing on this earth, but recorded history, the history of our civilization and of others that came earlier, goes back a little more than 5,000 years. And history is a record of wars, massacres, revolutions, famines, plagues, terror, and death. To be sure, civilization at its worst is far less horrible than the primeval savagery that preceded it. But history is a record of blood and tears, often shed in vain, but sometimes adding a little to that necessarily slow and painful ascent from the step pyramids of the first dynasties of socialistic Egypt to the rational human freedom envisaged by the American Constitution. But it is a history of blood and tears, and no intellectually honest man can promise all mankind any future within the next 1,000 years other than blood and tears. The most that we can hope is that we, the men of the West, can regain for ourselves that comparative state of security and less suffering we enjoyed around the turn of the century, when we use the technological power that we alone have created to dominate the world. The comparative tranquility that a large part, not all, of our population enjoyed in the brief decades before we started to commit suicide. There is also a chronological difficulty. If we identify the conspirators as communists, we presumably trace the conspiracy back to that fetid degenerate Karl Marx, or at least to his time, say 120 or 130 years ago. That leaves a lot of history unexplained. If we take the alternative, the Illuminati, we can go back a little farther. The famous Order of Illuminati was founded by another degenerate, Adam Weishaupt, in 1776. And that secret conspiracy undoubtedly had something, probably a very great deal, to do with the orgy of bestiality that is commonly called the French Revolution. But that was very late in history. We can go back by assuming that there were the White House's conspiracy was a continuation of earlier ones, to the earliest conspiracy of that kind of which we have an historical record, founded in the Near East in the 9th century after Christ. So we stop in the 9th century A.D., comparatively recent times. If we pick the Jews as the conspiratorial nucleus, we can do better chronologically. But satisfactory historical evidence takes us back only to the 5th century before Christ, although we can, with some probability, go back another century. But there we must stop, so far as strictly historical evidence is concerned. We have gone back, in other words, only half the span of recorded history. So what are you going to do with the other half? How are you going to explain, for example, the breakdown of Egyptian civilization at the end of the 6th dynasty in the 23rd century B.C.? And are you going to make the Jews so ubiquitous that they will be responsible for the convulsions in the long history of China, or for the fall of the Mayan culture in Central America? A continuous conspiracy from the beginning of recorded time certainly gets us into difficulties, doesn't it? Now, this difficulty should not make us lose sight of our one certainty, that there is an international conspiracy that affected the conquest of Russia in 1918 and has ever since been moving steadily toward conquest of the whole world, now within striking distance of its goal. And it now very confidently expects us to fall into its hands within the next few years like a ripe fruit, or should I say, a rotten fruit.
This is Carl Klang.
And fears. They move us through illusion and confusion of the mind, and by changing subtle meanings to the words between the lines. It's the news behind the news and the methods you can use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols, the learned elders of Zion. They'll tell you it's a forgery, they'll tell you it's a fake, that some anti-Semite wrote it for the money that he'd make. It's been slanderized and demonized and labeled racist hate by the same who stake a claim to its creation. Now I'm not here to try to argue if it's false or if it's true, if the author was a commie or the likes of you know who. What I'm really trying to tell you and to get across to you is it's a blueprint to the downfall of our nation. There's a cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. There's a road to communism, there's a global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control their destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's the blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. It's a crime to even own one if you live in Germany, though it's not an anti-Jewish publication. So if you ever get a chance to get a copy of your own, just remember not to ever leave it lying around your home, cause you never know just where their snoopy news reporters roam. One might even be a friend or close relation. It's the cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. It's the source of communism. It's the global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control our destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. The learned elders of Zion. Yee-haw! Go ahead and wail at that wall.
Okay, now for the serious part. But first, a quick email. Now, I won't embarrass this individual by naming him, but he sent me an email asking a question, which I do get sometimes, to the effect of, "Dear Harold, I want to support and help the Northwest Front, but I have this problem. I was in prison for thus and such." Well, so were millions of other Americans at one time or another. I will do this man the courtesy of assuming that he was telling the truth about why he was inside, But that's the first problem. Everybody in prison has a long, convoluted story about how he ended up there and how it really, really wasn't his fault. He was just at the wrong place at the wrong time, or he was the victim of anti-white discrimination, whatever. For example, I get a lot of letters from prisoners trolling for free literature, and they always tell me that they're in on a gun charge. And then when I check them out on the correctional websites, it turns out they're in for drugs or burglary, so forth and so on. Now, on the other hand, the hell of it is, a lot of these guys may well be correct. Prison is now a multi-billion dollar industry in this society, and it needs human bodies and human lives to feed on. And it's horribly easy to simply get pulled into the machine because the beast needs bodies and blood to feed its habit. I personally do not consider this system to be sufficiently competent, never mind sufficiently just, to decide who should be punished and for what. When we have cases like Edgar Steele and Bill White and Leroy Gibson and the Greensboro Man, so forth and so on, it's kind of hard to look down on some guy just because he's been in prison. Long story short, because I need to move on to other stuff here. My answer is, it depends. I personally know white men who have ended up in prison as a result of hideous injustice of a kind that would make you bury your face in your hands and weep. I also know guys who are simply lifelong con men, players, liars, and bullshitters who try to play the movement almost out of force of habit. I take every individual on a case-by-case basis. I look at the official version, I look at the individual's version, and I run it through a bullshit meter looking for lies. One thing, though. If you are a registered sex offender, you cannot be officially or publicly associated with the Northwest Front or the independence movement in any way. Never mind how it happened. I'm perfectly well aware that most so-called sex offenders never do any active prison time, and that a large number of these cases, if not the majority, are plea-bargained statutory rape cases where some dumbass was partying and he ended up in the wrong place at the wrong time with some teenage girl who really did look made up and stacked enough to be 21, and the guy was drunk or stoned, and he simply didn't think to ruin the romantic mood by asking for ID. I know one guy who, so far as I know, is still a registered sex offender in North Carolina. I'm not sure there's any way he can ever get off this damn thing. And he has been for 20 years now because when he was 18 years old, he kissed a 15-year-old girl at her birthday party, and a very bad family dynamic came into play. Now, a lot of these statutory things are vengeful parents who don't want to admit that their precious little Jennifer is a slut, but somehow she got caught. You may recall the biblical story of Potiphar's wife in the Old Testament. And when the guy sobers up and he's sitting in the lawyer's office, he's so scared of prison that he agrees to plea bargain, and of course to register. Now, I'm sorry if all of that is a little too politically incorrect, even for some of our people, but what can I tell you? Statistically, it's the truth, and I'm sick and tired of all this filthy society's lies. All of that having been said, I repeat, we cannot in any way, shape, or form be associated with registered sex offenders. Even if you are genuinely innocent, as I'm willing to accept that you might be. Now, remember what I've said repeatedly. The white American's social programming is strong and his attention span is short. He must never be confronted with ideas, symbols, and terminology which he has been conditioned from birth to reject or to react to in a certain way. And you must never confront him with anything that you have to stop and explain. If you absolutely must stop and explain something which is foreign or unusual or which might have tripped some of his little mental reflexes that get socially engineered into our people, you need a quick and snappy comeback, like Aryan is the German word for white man, and then you drive on. If you try and sit down and explain what an Aryan is, or you give somebody a long and complicated story about why somebody associated with the NF shows up on the internet as a registered sex offender, you will lose them within 60 seconds. Their minds will simply snap shut. If you have been so unfortunate as to innocently get on this register, I say again, innocently, then you can't be associated with us in any way. And like I said, I'm not sure there's any way ever to actually get off of it. Now, if you want to help, sit there behind your computer, post the link to northwestfront.org all over, send money, buy Northwest novels and distribute them, review Northwest novels on the internet. If for any reason you honestly cannot migrate, there's all kinds of things you can do. And if you have somehow ended up on the registered sex offenders list, you can still do those things, but you do them anonymously. There must never be any connection between you and the party. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Now, there's something I want to talk to you guys about, and I want to make sure that I make myself clear here. For the past couple of months or so, there's been a drop in the number of hits to the Northwest Front website. No, we're not losing all our listeners, and we're still well into the four-figure per week range, and the snail mail volume is actually increasing, but there has been a falling off on hits to northwestfront.org. It's not a big drop, but big enough to be noticeable. And when I first noticed it, I wondered what it was, but I wasn't too worried, since there is always hills and valleys. When it was still noticeable a month later, I started to get curious as to what the problem was. At first, I attributed it to the fact that back in the summer, the American Library Association listed northwestfront.org as a hate site, and I know that did cost us a few visitors, although not all the public library computers have blocked us. A few will still let visitors through, but you get some kind of stupid warning page about how northwestfront.org is a hate site and it might be offensive, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, long story short, I checked our stat counter and I noticed something. Almost all of our visitors now come to the site directly and without a referring link. In other words, someone who comes here to listen to Radio Free Northwest or whatever these days either types the link into his address bar or else he's already got us bookmarked. Now, the drop has been in people who are coming to our site from other sites where someone has posted a link to our URL. Other places on the internet, in other words. Now, these are almost gone now, apparently. Nobody's using them anyway. Not all of them. We still do get visitors from referring links on various sites, but nothing like the number of them we got in May or July, to take an example. Okay, this may be paranoid on my part, but what I think may have happened here is that we've been hit with some kind of internet sweep or cleanse or purge software, or someone has just hunted down all our links individually and removed them or blocked them somehow. I'm not exactly certain how this would work, but I believe that such so-called cleansing and expunging software does exist. If memory serves, certain websites that claim to clean up people's reputations on the internet advertise such services. I know that about 8 or 10 months ago, my own blog, Thought Crime, got hit with one, and a 5-year-old post regarding the Jewish pedophile and British Member of Parliament Greville Janner was forcibly deleted. Not sure whether this was with or without Google's knowledge and consent. It strikes me that just purging other Google blogs and sites would probably have this diminishing effect on our hit count. Maybe it's something that Google or Yahoo are doing to get rid of wicked and evil hate. These big outfits do this all the time. I've had dozens of accounts and groups deleted from Facebook and Yahoo down through the years, which I have, of course, immediately put right back up. Usually what happens is after a few weeks of pulling down my groups and sites, the provider loses interest and they wander off. I can't think of any of these censorship purges which have permanently removed me or the NF from anywhere that I want us to be. Now, maybe instead of going for our site itself, somebody's trying to cut down our readership by making us inaccessible unless you know where to look. Now, one of our comrades in Idaho commented on this as follows. Dear HAC, in the last 6 months or so, Netanyahu has organized universities all across Israel to have their computer geek kids work as trolls and hackers to monitor anything deemed anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic or anti-Israel across the globe and either counter-argue it or hack, remove, or damage it. The Hebrew word for this is hasbara. That is why I use Tor, signed Rich. Yeah, I've heard of that in the media, and it may be what's going on here. I certainly wouldn't expect Israel to respect the rights of white Americans or anyone else. But if that's what's happened, then I need you guys to get your cyber butts back online and post that link to northwestfront.org. We need to put up links faster than the Jews or whoever is doing this can knock them down. Check anywhere you've put one up before, and if the link is gone, then put it back up. Then go find other places to post the link, especially places where young white people hang out on the internet. Now, this is why I was so adamant about not letting these assholes drive us off Facebook a few years ago. Facebook is where our target audience is. Now, I suppose I should mention something here, and that is that I am not happy about our excessive reliance on the internet. And I'm not happy about asking you guys to do something which some of you may use as an excuse not to migrate. No, you haven't done enough. Nobody has done enough until we have the Northwest Republic. I don't want anybody sitting out there in Poughkeepsie or Charlotte or Houston or Milwaukee spending their evenings tapping away on the computer and then getting up and saying, oh yeah, I did my racial duty tonight. No, you didn't. Not really. At least not all of it. Migration to the homeland and making your life here is your primary racial duty. And as much as we need the help that many of you give us, everything from donating money and making YouTube videos to posting links to northwestfront.org, I would almost rather that you didn't do that and instead you came home and lived here. Nothing excuses you from the moral obligation to come home, to take the gap, to take the Northwest Passage. This is a group called Show of Hands.
Westward from the Davis Strait, it's there, 'twas said to lie, the sea route to the Orient, for which so many died, seeking gold and glory, leaving broken, weathered bones, and a long forgotten, lonely care of stones. Ah, for just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin, reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wild and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. 3 centuries thereafter, I take passage overland in the footsteps of brave Kelso, where a sea of flowers began, watching cities rise before me and behind me sink again. This tardiest explorer driving hard across the plain. Ah, for just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin, reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wild and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. Through the night behind the wheel, the mileage clicking west, I think upon Mackenzie, David Thompson, who cracked the mountain ramparts and showed a path for me to race the roaring Fraser to the sea. First men to this way, like them I led a settled life, I threw it all away to seek a Northwest Passage at the call of many men to find their but the road back home again. Bitch.
As most of you will be aware, the rollout of Obamacare has turned into a real dog's dinner. Millions of people are losing their previous health care insurance policies, around 5 million policies having been canceled by today so far, affecting probably between 8 and 10 million people. And since the healthcare.gov website isn't working, they can't even replace those lost policies with Obamacare, even if they can afford the double or triple premiums. It turns out that the dictator himself flat out lied when he said that people could keep their existing policies if they wanted to. There are simply so many of these canceled policies that even the state-controlled media can't ignore the fact, and people are starting to get very, very angry over all this horse hockey. Okay, this isn't CNN or Fox News, and I won't go into all that, but the point I'm making is this. The people who rule us are fools. They are incompetent. They are stupid. They had 3 years to design a website, something your average white computer geek living in his parents' basement does on a slow weekend when he's tired of playing World of Warcraft. 3 years and billions of dollars, and this is the result. Jesus, where the hell did all that money go? Let me ask you this. Why are we afraid of people who are this stupid and lazy and incompetent? Let me give you guys a purely hypothetical situation, solely for the sake of argument, of course. Now, let's suppose that this government, this United States, was faced with an armed insurrection in some part of the country, oh, the Pacific Northwest, maybe. Let us further speculate that this insurrection was carried out by a revolutionary party with the same kind of tough, pragmatic, courageous, and determined men and women as, say, the Provisional IRA. Okay, now you know this is hypothetical. White people like that don't exist in this country anymore, but let's say that we did find a few American provos in among the unicorns and the sea serpents. And such an event did occur. These stupid, lazy bastards can't even set up a website. What the hell makes us think that they could fight a 30-year counterinsurgency campaign like the British did in Northern Ireland? A campaign which they lost, by the by, if you judge by Gerry Adams plunking his butt down at the tables of power now, however limited his capacity. Hell, the Iraqis ran our lords and masters out of their country after only 9 years. Always remember that huge embassy in Baghdad that was meant to be the hub of a gigantic American Middle East empire full of oil and Starbucks and Burger Kings. That's pretty obvious that they're never going to beat the Afghans either. Hell, the Russians could have told them that going in back in 2001. Really, if some scenario similar to my novels were ever to come about, what makes us think that these people would do any better in Seattle or Portland than they did in Baghdad and Kabul? Well, since America doesn't seem to have any white men of character who are up to Iraqi or Afghan standards, I guess we'll never know. Our time is up now, so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.